Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Wow, John Lester fired up.
Just really, it's like he's done this before a time or two. At the Bernstein and McKnight Show, I'm Connor McKnight. He's Barry Rosner. Cubs opening day, just like an hour and 3 minutes. Zach Zabin will get things going with the pregame show. We are privileged to have Cubs Executive Vice President and General Manager Jed Hoyer on the phone. Jed, good to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, guys. How you doing?
Doing well. Looking forward to a little baseball. A couple 6 months. It'll be a good run. I wanted to start asking you about the bullpen that you guys have collected and assembled for opening day. Bullpens are they're fickle things. They're all over the place, up and down. And with the assemblage of, you know, some veterans and a couple of young kids that you've added in, I wonder if the way you assess bullpen arms and who to bring in has changed some over the last few years.
Well, I think last year we had some struggles as far as throwing strikes. So that was the biggest focus we had this winter. You know, at Moro, Cishek, and we brought back Dunsing. You know, that was really our focus because, you know, last year we had great stuff in the bullpen. We had a lot of high strikeout rates. You were tough to hit. But we had a lot of walks, and I think that, you know, one-run games, walks really can hurt you. So that was really the biggest focus this offseason. If that's a change, you know, it's a small one. I think we've always valued strike throwing. I just think we got away from it last year, maybe got a little bit tired and, you know, maybe lost a little focus on the strike zone in trying to strike guys out. But that was the biggest thing we looked at this winter, and hopefully it'll make a difference.
Jed, what was the feeling when you broke camp earlier this week, left Arizona? Did it feel at all different from last year leaving Arizona?
Yeah, you know, it's hard to assess the difference between last year and this year. You know, I think that some of it's revisionist history a little bit. You know, last year we ended up starting out the year 6-3. We didn't play that well, but we still won. You know, we won the first three series of the year, and then we started struggling a little bit. I really do look at this as a marathon. You know, we had a great camp. Our guys are really focused. But ultimately, you know, it's about the day in, day out grind and the focus, you know, series after series. And you know, opening day is great. I love opening day. It's, you know, it's the start of something new. But ultimately, it's not about this game or this series or this road trip. It's about doing it for 6 months. And I think that that's the part that the players know. And, you know, last year, you know, we started off okay, but we really didn't do a good job of maintaining that focus for the first half.
Talking with Cubs GM Jed Hoyer here on the Bernstein and McKnight Show. Barry in for Dan. Jed, I'm sure we'll get to a Kyle Schwarber question. I'm sure we'll get to a Jason Hayward question. But the last 2 days or so, Barry and I have been talking a bit about Javi Baez. And just, I've been kind of amazed that over his last 2 years or so, really the profile, the giant swing and miss, but prodigious power, it's really not been the worst case scenario in swing and miss for him. He's really kind of leveled things out. And I wonder if you guys internally see him as much of a candidate to break out and move up to that next tier as anybody on that really talented lineup.
Yeah, you know, I think when he has a really good two-strike approach, you know, when he, you know, takes a little bit more controlled swings, I mean, he's such an impact player. You look at, you know, the way the ball comes off his bat, you know, it's really special. He uses the whole field. I just think that, you know, with maturity and experience in the big leagues, I think that some of those big swings and misses will go away. I don't think they ever all will. I think it's in his DNA. I think that the way he plays defense, the way he runs the bases, the way he hits, I mean, he is aggressive all the time. But I do think that offensively, you know, I just think we'll see, you know, small steps each year of getting better and better. And listen, he wins a lot of games for us. I always talk about, you know, there's not a lot of players in baseball that can night in, night out, you know, do something to help you win every single night. And I think that's really the special thing about Javi. If it's not a double in the gap or a homer, it's a great tag or great play defensively or a base running play. And he's always doing something to help us win.
Jed, you guys don't, you're not in the habit of acquiring or drafting players who feel entitled in any way. It's one of the reasons this has worked. But you have a guy in Albert Almora who seems to come close to getting a job every now and then something happens and he doesn't. How should he feel about his position with the Chicago Cubs right now?
I mean, he should feel great. I mean, I think that, you know, listen, we have a good team. We're deep, and, you know, everyone's not going to be in the lineup every day. And I always think that people make a big deal about, you know, an opening day lineup. But ultimately, again, it's about the length of the season, and there's going to be injuries, and there's going to be poor performance, and there's going to be excellent performance. And I think that, you know, guys are going to come and go in the lineup, and I think he's going to be a huge part of this team. So, you know, he's not in the lineup today. I'm sure he'll play at some point in the game if the game dictates it. And, you know, like I said, he's going to be a huge part of this team. He just doesn't happen to be in the lineup today. And you can say the same thing for Ben Zobrist.
Have you seen conversations with Chili Davis and Jason Hayward work out?
Good. I mean, you know, I think they've got a really good rapport. You know, the challenge of spring training in Arizona is that, you know, listen, the ball flies. It's no one's using advanced reports. You know, I think the challenge of hitting in the big league starts today when teams are bearing down, when the players are bearing down. So I love the rapport that they have. I think that, you know, Jason's in a good place mentally to go into the season. You know, and that's why, to me, you know, people talk a lot about, you know, spring training stats or who looks good and who doesn't look good. And, you know, ultimately, spring training is a time to get ready, you know, to work on things and to focus on what you need to focus on. The pitcher isn't trying to break you down and trying to get you out in a specific way. You know, you're not setting up the pitcher. You know, that stuff starts today, and I feel like he's entering the season in a good mindset.
Yeah, I mean, you're in a place where I'm sure you're tired of answering questions over the last couple of years about Jason Hayward, but you, I would imagine you're in a place where you have hope that this will change. Are there specific things that make you think that that from an offensive standpoint he'll be better?
Yeah, I mean, I like the work he's done with Chile, and I like his mindset. And like I said, ultimately it's going to come down to performing, you know, now that it starts today. And, you know, there's no point in sort of speculating about what's going to happen based on spring training. You know, it's everyone's hitting 0-0-0, you know, starting at 12:40. And I think that that's important to remember. And, you know, I think I've been doing this too long to get excited about a really good spring or to worry about a bad spring. You know, I've had too many examples of fretting about guys and having them play well and feeling great about a guy and having him hit, you know, 140 in April. So to me, it's about, you know, the look in his eye and the fact that he's, you know, he's ready to go. And, like, you know, hopefully, you know, the performance, you know, mirrors that, because, you know, he's obviously played great defense and run the base as well and been awesome in the clubhouse, but, you know, I don't think his offense has matched, you know, his expectations yet. And I think that, you know, our hope is certainly this is the year that happens.
Jed, when you guys and Joe decided to bring in Jim Hickey as the new pitching coach for the Chicago Cubs, I'm sure he had a mission statement, or I'm sure he had a philosophy as to how he wanted the guys that you did have on the roster, guys like, you know, John Lester and Kyle Hendricks, guys who were already there, how he wanted to help improve them. How has that plan played out over the last 6 weeks?
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because we have with the mix of guys that we have, you know, we have veteran guys, and for the most part, I think it's important that the pitching coach come in, you know, without, you know, a lot of preconceived notions. You don't want to change a player like that without really getting to know him. And so I think that process has gone really well. He's got a great way about him. He's obviously got a ton of experience. And, you know, I think he did a great job of gathering information from Theo and me and Joe and the rest of the, you know, the guys in the pitching infrastructure before he talked about any kind of changes, because, you know, what you think you might see on TV or on video, there may be a good reason for that. And so I think in general, the best coaches come in and really try to get to know the people before. And I think, you know, Jim has certainly done that. And, you know, it was a great spring. He did a great job running the pitching in spring training. And, like I said, he's got a great way about him. He instills confidence in his guys, and, you know, I think that he's going to be great for the staff.
Sounds like there's a lot of communication between all of you. I mean, you've got Hickey, you've got Borzello, You've got Hadavi, you've got you and Theo and Joe. It sounds like there's a lot of voices. Is it the kind of thing that you guys all talk about before a significant change is made?
Yeah, no question. I think that's a really essential part of doing this thing correctly, is that, you know, if you're going to make a change with a guy, you know, who's been such a significant part of our team, I think that you got to really talk about why you're doing it and talk about the reasons. You know, I think that it might be different with a younger player that, you know, has, you know, a few more obvious faults. But if you're going to start tinkering with, you know, an essential player on our team, I think it's great to get everyone together and talk through it. And I do think that we've got really good communication here. I think that, you know, we all like each other. For the most part, we've all worked together for a while. And so I do think when you're making important decisions like that, it's important to sort of sit down and talk through it.
So a World Series championship has been won. It's another year of playoff-type expectations. You've got young kids who are forming the core of this lineup in Chris Bryant and Anthony Rizzo. You and Theo have been such a big part of their professional baseball careers. I just wonder if you've taken a minute to step back and look at those. You look back at how young Chris was when you came up, how young Rizzo was when you brought him over, when you had him in San Diego. I mean, the development that they've made has just been incredible to watch, and I wonder if you get to enjoy that ever.
A little bit. You know, I think you have to sort of step back sometimes and think about that. I was thinking about that the other day with Riz. I mean, you know, he came up at 21 with the Padres, like watching his swing now and the way he carries himself now compared to then is pretty amazing. And it's a good lesson. You know, guys evolve, you know, guys change. And, you know, I think it's a good lesson to bet on the person. You know, he's incredibly driven, thoughtful, and he made changes. He was willing to step back and make changes to his game in order to get better. And I think a lot of our guys have done that. And I think, you know, we've really benefited from having a lot of good people here that are willing to, you know, keep improving. And I think that this young group, I mean, you talk about Chris, I think what Chris is 26 and, you know, Anthony's 28 and, you know, all these guys are in their kind of, you know, mid-20s now, and they're still really young, you know, and I think that's why I have so much optimism about our offense, that I know these guys have another gear they can get to and they will get to in their career. You know, guys sort of come into their best self in their mid to late 20s as hitters, so I think that's what excites me the most. I think that we have a chance to have a really special offense.
Jed, what keeps you up at night?
You know, same thing that keeps the other 29 GMs up at night, you know, injuries. I like our team. I like our group. I think we have a chance to be really good. You know, we need to play incredibly focused, driven baseball, which I have a lot of confidence will happen, and we got to stay healthy. And I think that is, you know, that's the biggest thing. Everyone's going to have injuries. You can't use that as an excuse. You have to deal with them effectively and have the depth to get through those hard times, and those things are going to happen. You know, I always try to remind myself on opening day that, you know, this isn't going to go as you expect. There's going to be twists and turns and, you know, good moments and bad moments. And, you know, really how we deal with those moments is really going to determine how successful we are. And so that's really what keeps me up at night, is the unknown, that, you know, things are going to go wrong and things are going to happen. And you have to, you know, deal with those things in the most effective way possible.
So Victor Caratini, Jed Hoyer, Cubs general manager here on the Bernstein McKnight Show, Barry Rosner in for Dan. Victor Caratini makes the squad. You guys haven't exactly pushed prospects, not quite like this. You know, Chris Bryant was held and Anthony Rizzo was held and development was insured, I guess, to a certain point. Maybe it's a little bit different. Maybe I feel different, I should say, because Caratini is a catcher and Wilson is going to be there so primarily. What went into that decision? How was that conversation with everybody, including Victor? And what are your expectations for his development, knowing he won't quite get the at-bats he might in Iowa?
Well, that's something we talked about. You know, we felt like the right way to break camp was with Victor, and he did such an awesome job this winter getting himself in shape and ready for the season, and he's done a great job. And, you know, we felt like he earned that spot, but we're not going to run away from his development. And if he's not getting enough at bats for some reason, you know, we're going to, you know, be aware of that and make sure we, you know, fix that. So, you know, again, the opening day roster is a very fluid thing. He earned this spot based on his performance, but we know that, having him not playing enough doesn't help him or help us in the future, and we'll make sure that we don't ignore that.
Jed, appreciate it. Great having you on. Enjoy opening day, and here's to a few fewer sleepless nights throughout the season.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
You got it. Jed Hoyer, General Manager and Executive Vice President of the Chicago Cubs. I found it interesting that, when you mentioned Albert Almora, and you asked about his development and the chance he's had to win a couple of jobs and not getting them here or there, it's a constant conversation that has to happen between front office management, between Joe, between Albert, between his teammates too, and kind of ties into what we were talking about with Doug Glanville, or about what Doug Glanville wrote earlier today. You have to have a system that supports you. Otherwise, it's real easy to let things get inside that noggin.
Well, Hoyer's right about one thing, and that's that you are always going to have injuries and you're always going to have some poor performances, and that's going to open doors for other people. It's just there's a tipping point for relatively inexperienced players. When they believe that they've earned something and it doesn't happen for them, there is a tipping point where the pressure then, once given an opportunity, especially if those opportunities are limited, becomes too much and you don't get optimal performance because that player is not in the proper state of mind, especially Connor, if he doesn't think he's the manager's guy. And, there's enough evidence at this point to make you think that Albert Almora is just not Joe Maddon's guy. And that's okay. I mean, every manager
you have to
has his guys.
You must have to operate.
Every manager has guys that he loves and guys that he maybe doesn't trust as much or doesn't, frankly, just care about as much. And Almora seems to be one of those guys. I think when you have a team of this caliber, you have an opportunity to give a guy like this an opportunity because what do you got to lose? I mean, you're gonna score 900 runs either way,
yeah,
right?
There or not.
So you can afford to give him a couple of months to get himself to where you want him to be, where he's hitting right-handers. But you're not going to find that out. You're just not going to find it out. I think it's kind of a shame. I'm not saying I have a solution. I'm not, because you have Schwarber, you have Happ, who's instant offense.
And you have Hayward.
You have the Hayward problem. You have Baez at second. You don't have a place to put Zobrist. And you don't have a place to put Almora right now. And I'm not saying I have a solution. I'm just saying it's a shame because I think Albert Almora could be a really good player. I just don't know when it is you cross that line where maybe you start to lose a guy.
Segment brought to you by Fogo de Chão. Taste the difference of skilled gaucho chefs at Fogo de Chão Brazilian Steakhouse, where every cut is expertly prepared. Reserve today in Chicago, Rosemont, and Naperville at Fogo.com. We've got a little Cub news. We've got a little Cardinal news when we get back. Some interesting things brewing in the NL Central. We'll get to some phone calls too. 312-644-6767. He's Barry Rosner. I'm Connor McKnight. This is 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
That is Ian Happ, your leadoff man for the Chicago Cubs. I'm Connor McKnight. He's Barry Rosner. It's the Bernstein and McKnight Show on 670 The Score, taking you up to the opening day broadcast for the Chicago Cubs against the Miami Marlins. Zach will have the pregame show at 11:05. You'll hear from, I would imagine, everybody. Len Casper, Ron Coomer, the whole team.
To cast a thousand.
It really is. It takes a village. Also, congratulations. Speaking of, congratulations to the Loyola Chicago basketball team. Cheer them on as they take on Michigan Saturday night for a chance to go to the championship game. It's brought to you by Subway. New signature wraps now at Subway restaurants. Barry, two little pieces of news to get to before we get to the update, where you will also hear these pieces of news, I suppose. Reports out say that Greg Holland is going to be a Cardinal. We were just talking about Greg not having a job. Turns out he will, it seems, fill out the back end of that Cardinals bullpen.
Well, Luke Gregerson, who's bad anyway, is hurt, so that makes sense. I'm surprised it hasn't happened already. He was also apparently flirting with the Mets overnight.
That's what all people do with the Mets, just flirt. Just flirt, say hello, maybe look at a Syndergaard photo, and then move on and sign
he's
with a team.
Wearing a shirt.
Well,
what are you supposed to do?
That's a thing that you are focused on. I don't know that this changes my projection, my thought about the Cardinals. We talked to Chris Ranji yesterday
about
that Cardinals thing. listen, you need another bat in there at somewhere, and I would also like to see a starter or three improve that rotation to get anywhere close to challenging or making things interesting for them in the NL Central.
Yeah, they have arms coming, and that's great. I don't understand the winner. I really don't.
No.
I don't know exactly what they were doing. The Ozuna deal, I mean, phenomenal.
I like that one.
He's a great player. I say to people, he's the best player that changed teams this winter, and I get blowback on that from nearly everyone, and I'm just thinking, well, I guess you don't watch him play.
My favorite part is that they seemingly think you forgot that Giancarlo Stanton traded teams, but in reality, you know that.
I'm aware that the home run champ changed teams.
That's the point of saying what you're saying.
That's exactly why I bring it up, is this is a tremendous all-around player who's really good, and good on the Cardinals for making that deal. That's a tremendous sign. But I just, Holland doesn't change anything in terms of how I feel about that team. It's a third place team.
Yes, I think that's exactly where they're at. And another bullpen arm doesn't. We haven't seen the numbers for a deal or the length of a deal yet, but it does look like Greg Holland is going to head to the
year
Cardinals.
I'm going to guess a year in
$6.5 million. That's what everybody gets.
I was going to say eight.
Yeah, it's probably more like it. An option, maybe some sort of option for Greg Holland.
Some bonuses for appearances, or maybe games finished or games closed.
A little bit of Joe Maddon news when we get back. We'll step into the update studio, though.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Welcome back to the Bernstein and McKnight Show. I'm Connor McKnight. He's Barry Rosner. That's the Humpty Dance. Barry, I was on the red line coming in the other day. Some dude with the headphones, the giant over-ear headphones, was just banging to Humpty Dance, just going hard. There was dancing. I thought he was going to get up on the pole to the Humpty Dance.
And you felt like you needed some of this?
It was very strange. It was very strange to watch. It was a throwback from another era. But whatever gets you going, it's the opening day, whatever you have to do to get yourself hyped and ready to roll. Shouldn't have to do much because we've got baseball coming on the score in a solid 30 minutes. Zach Zabin will have the pregame show for the Cubs and Marlins.
It's important to remember.
Ian Happ in the leadoff spot.
Yeah, important to remember what Jed Hoyer was saying about the marathon that it is.
Yeah,
today is fun.
Mm-hmm.
Today is a rebirth for many people.
You sound like a doctor who's about to tell me to take my vitamins.
I recommend you continue.
But Connor,
you still go to Vegas for 3 days, Connor.
Enjoy yourself
and don't work out and don't take any vitamins.
That's right.
And don't sleep. But when you come home,
yeah.
You do have to start taking your vitamins again and get some sleep and exercise every day.
A little bit of news from Joe Maddon this morning. Teased this just before the update that he says that when Ian Happ plays, Ian Happ will hit leadoff. That is a fait accompli. That is a done deal. That is the standard.
Until he doesn't.
Changes. That's my favorite part. I think my favorite part of spring training leading into the week and a half before we set the rosters and everything is who's going to be that 25th man? And I allow myself, I enjoy actually getting into that frenzy and figuring out who's going to make that roster, despite the fact that I know in 3 weeks, maybe less, it's going to change. Somebody else is coming up. Hell, the White Sox didn't have Tommy Kahnle on the opening day roster last year.
Amazing.
Jake Petrischka goes down in game one. Kahnle comes up out of Charlotte, blows away everybody, and is featured in one of the biggest deals at the right up to the deadline.
And he's good enough to close right now for the New York Yankees.
Boy, was he good. New York Yankees, by the way, that bullpen.
Yeah, and I'm telling you, he's as good as anybody they have down there.
But you're forgetting about Giancarlo Stanton.
Yeah, I forgot he was there. Sorry, can he pitch too?
But what about Giancarlo?
I think it was the spring of 95, and it was a lockout year, so it was late, or strike year, whatever, and it was late April, and we were about to leave Arizona. And I remember Joey Reeves, who worked for the Tribune then, was trying to get me to commit on Joe Kamak or Todd Pratt as the second catcher.
Couldn't think
and,
of a ball.
You know, I was writing, and I got 50 things to do, and the game's going on, and I said, I don't know, Kamak's a better, much better defensive player. Pratt brings a better bat. What are you doing to me? I don't care. Stop it. Leave me alone. Who cares?
None of it, it will matter in 3 weeks.
25th guy, you're right. You got me.
But no.
I was talking about it.
But
now
no.
Leave me alone.
Today is our day to get nuts. 3 days in Vegas. And when we come back, we'll deal with it. We'll deal with the rest and take our vitamins. Speaking of coming back, we'll take a quick break here. And on the other side, general manager of the Chicago White Sox, Rick Hahn, will join us. We'll talk a little Sox next on 670 The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It's White Sox manager Ricky Renteria. I'm Connor McKnight. He's Barry Rosner. In for Dan, it's the Bernstein and McKnight Show. It's time for your chance to win $1,000 in cash on The Score. The hour's keyword is ROLL, R-O-L-L. Text ROLL to 72881 by the end of the hour. Again, the keyword, ROLL, 72881. One randomly selected nationwide entrant from this hour will win. Please do not text and drive. Message and data rates may apply. We bring in the general manager of the Chicago White Sox, Rick Hahn. Rick, thanks so much for joining us, and I apologize that you are not eligible to win that $1,000 because you're talking with us instead.
Fair enough. I still appreciate you guys having me.
Thanks. You can text maybe on the other phone. Every GM has two, right? That's how that works?
Yeah, I'm not going to reveal any secrets here, but there's a chance of that, yeah.
So the opening day lineup is set, Rick. The roster is set. I think some Sox fans have wondered, why not get a little bit more? I don't know. There were a couple of kids that you could have been a little creative with. Ryan Cordell, you know, lit some eyes up and things in spring training. Why did the decision to base things the way they were? And I guess, you know, to a point, Barry and I were just talking about, obviously the 25 you break with are never the 25 you end with, too.
Yeah, I think that's probably the key point in all this. And I certainly understand and had similar conversations with some of the affected players. I certainly understand the focus on the opening day roster. But in reality, no team is blessed enough to get through the season with all 25 guys intact the entire year, the 25 you break with on opening day. So inevitably, there is going to be opportunities for others. And in making the assessment of who is initially going to be on the first roster, it was not just about the 3-4 weeks of games down in Arizona. It was about the entire body of their work going back to last season and how they performed last year, where they were from a health standpoint, and what opportunities were going to be there for them today versus what opportunities might be there for them in Chicago once the season is more fully underway. And taking Cordell as an example, we think the world of this kid. He came in and definitely impressed not only White Sox fans who saw him play, but all of us in the front office and on the coaching staff. He is a guy, however, who missed a good portion of last year. He's got about 240 plate appearances in his career above AA. He came in this camp. We were primarily hoping for him to show that he was healthy, that he was over the back issue that cost him half of last season, and to show to our staff and those watching the tools that led to our scouts being so enthusiastic for him. In the end, we felt Ryan was best served by going to Charlotte, playing every day, continuing to build off that hot spring, ideally. And then when he does inevitably come to Chicago, it's going to be in a situation where he has the opportunity to play every day. And because we view this guy as having a good size upside, and we don't want to compromise that by having him simply getting, you know, 6 to 10 plate appearances a week while sitting on our bench right now.
Rick, you don't have to do anything right now with these guys. Andy McPhail always said, never make a decision until you have to. And you don't have to do anything with Avi Garcia or Jose Abreu right now. But when you get toward the trade deadline, that's a year and a half of team control. What do you think your approach will be, or is that something you just don't know at this point?
Our approach will be similar to what it's been for the last 15 months or so, and that is making an assessment about what puts us in the best long-term position to contend for multiple championships. And certainly, for different reasons, given where they are in their careers, both Avi and Jose could conceivably play a role on championship-caliber clubs, which would require us to extend their control into 2020 and beyond. At the same time, just as we had to do with Chris and with Adam Eaton and Quintana and others, we have to make the assessment, are we closer over the long term? Are we in a better position for the long term to win championships? due to a trade in which we acquire more prospects and more players that conceivably could fit for the long term. It's a balancing act. Certainly as we get closer to seeing these prospects matriculate into the big leagues and contribute conceivably at a championship caliber level, we're going to need veterans. So it's not always the pivot from, you know, short-term veteran type guys to longer-term prospects that serves our long-term interests. But as you mentioned, and as Andy McPhail and others have said before, we don't have to make that decision just yet. So we got more time, another few months prior to the deadline, to assess where we are as an organization and how we're best served for the long term.
This segment's brought to you by Orkin. Termites aren't funny. $5 billion of damage a year won't have you busting a gut. Visit Orkin.com today to save 15% on termite control. Orkin, pest control down to a science.
Just to play devil's advocate, Rick, I have tried to make the case, not a decision for you, but I have tried to make the case that
that
Jose Abreu's value in that clubhouse is probably more than people realize, and there's no metric for it. And obviously you have a strong Cuban connection and a Latin community, and he matters. I'm not saying that will make your decision, but does that play a part in your decision?
No, I think we haven't run from that. We've been real clear about the fact that we place a great deal of value on what Jose brings to that clubhouse. I think in all candor, that's probably part of the reason, or a big part of the reason, I should say, that he hasn't been moved. I think all 29 clubs, other clubs, can assess and put a value on what he does between the white lines, and that value, in terms of his in-game contribution, is similar probably to our assessment of what his value is. But we really move that number up in our assessment based upon what he does in the clubhouse and based upon how he carries himself and how he's essentially the embodiment of how we want our players to approach this, approach the game and represent the club. So you only wind up making deals if you have similar assessments of value and you find an exchange where you line up and everybody's interests are served. It could well be that given how highly we regard Jose and how he fits, that there may never be a deal that makes sense for us, and instead we're much better served keeping him around. But yeah, the intangible or at least difficult to quantify contributions from this specific player play a very important role in our assessment.
Rick, Carson Fulmer in the rotation makes three pretty young guys in those five, with Lucas Giolito and Ronaldo Lopez being the other two. I remember talking with Jeremy at some point last year just about how it's kind of the, I guess, risk assessment of not those guys specifically, but just any rotation that has that many young starters in it, and the ability that you've got to have as a team to weather a couple of bad starts if they happen, because baseball happens and it's hard. I wonder what the spring training told you about having those guys in the same rotation. I wonder if that kind of risk assessment has changed any now that you've made or leading up to making that decision.
You know, the assessment probably did not change much over the course of the spring, in that regardless of how well any of the three performed, we knew that obviously we're going to have some inexperienced arms in the rotation. I think the biggest implication it had, again, at least on the opening day roster, is that we immediately open with a 13-man staff. Historically, you guys have been around long enough to remember when 11 was a bit of a stretch.
Oh, I remember the first time Don Zimmer went to 11, he nearly lost his mind.
Oh, and that's still a sentiment around the game in certain elements of the game today. And even 12 strikes people as too many, much less going to 13 immediately on opening day. But that more and more clubs are doing it, and the reason specifically we did it from the start is that because of those young arms and wanting to make sure we insulate guys. Again, there's going to be, as you've heard me say repeatedly, there's going to be a fair amount of development that happens at the big league level, and part of that is going to be struggles and how guys respond to adversity and able to right their own ships on the fly or over the course of a series of starts. And we want to give our young guys the opportunity to have those growing pains. But part of the responsibility in doing that is making sure you have the roster and in this instance, the arms available to insulate and protect them specifically, and make sure that nobody on that roster is carrying too much of the load.
What then was the spring like for Carlos Rodon? You guys watching Carlos and evaluating him, getting him back, and how do you move that rotation around to get Carlos in it once he's healthy?
As for the second part of that, we'll figure it out. As you said, baseball happens.
Right.
And over by the end of May or early June or whenever the timing winds up being that Carlos is ready to rejoin us here in Chicago, I'm guessing there's the answer is going to be fairly clear about how to adjust the rotation. If not, that's a good problem to have, and we'll adjust on the fly and figure out what works best for everybody, including the young kid's long-term development. As for what we saw from Carlos, you know, there's this element when an injured player is working his way back, and we saw it with Charlie Tilson over at the hitter's camp and then early in spring training as well. There's this moment in the rehabilitation where almost a weight is lifted off of them. Psychologically, they know that they're quote-unquote healthy, that the injury is over, and that they are now simply climbing and returning to their playing form as opposed to rehabilitating from a specific ailment. And you can tell in talking to players and how they're carrying themselves and how they're going about their work when they get to that point. And there's almost this, it's almost like a shot of adrenaline to them or a little boost that gets them, you know, a little extra spring in their step, the way they go about their work. And both with Tilson and now with Carlos, you see that they feel they're over that injury hump. And now they're just working to get themselves back into playing form and climbing. And certainly that's been the case with Carlos over the last few weeks. He's, knock on wood, he's throwing free and easy. His sidelines are going well, and he continues to climb in his progression.
It's funny how the narrative has changed on him. There's sort of this impression around Sox Nation, or, you know, maybe more accurately within the media, that well, he's a guy who's always going to be hurt, and, you know, he's never going to make it, and all that. And I don't really know why or how that happened. These are not really serious injuries that he has suffered, and. That was a debridement late last year, right? So, I mean, what he's coming back from, I assume you think, is not really that big a deal.
Well, I certainly don't share this sentiment that, you know, he's injury prone or always hurt or anything like that. I think his two biggest issues have been, as you mentioned, the bursa-sac debridement that he had last year, which is a serious procedure, but one that certainly doesn't have any long-term implications necessarily, and one that you can fully recover from and continue to go about your career. And I think the other one was when he tripped over the dugout steps and hurt his wrist, which obviously isn't the kind of thing that is necessarily recurring or a long-term trend. So Carlos, in reality, probably deserves a little bit of credit as opposed to skepticism for the way that he tried to fight through the injury last year. And he never really was quite himself. He pitched very effectively for an extended stretch last year, despite not having that looseness in his shoulder or that comfort in his shoulder that most guys are accustomed to when they're pitching. So he's a guy who is still, you know, part of this organization for at least 3 years after this. We still have 4 years of control on Carlos Rodon, and we expect him to possibly play an important role in on our next championship club. So we're certainly very optimistic about his future, but until we get him back up on a major league mound and taking the ball every fifth day in Chicago, I think we have to understand a little bit of the skepticism from fans or in the media.
Rick, Yoan Moncada seemed like a different guy to you a little bit over the last few weeks. Maybe I'm reading it from the outside in some, but there's a difference to me when a player knows he has a job versus when he's working for a job. It doesn't necessarily change the work he's putting in, but maybe the comfortability of Moncada knowing that this is his year to go explode.
I think there's something to that. I think you saw a heightened level of comfort and confidence in Moncada for at least the last, I don't know, 4, maybe 6 weeks of the season last year. Once it sort of clicked for him a little bit, and he knew how guys were trying to set him up, and he knew how he was going to respond to that. And certainly throughout the course of this spring, there was that confidence of knowing you're a big leaguer and knowing you belong, which for every normal individual, much less a high-profile 22-year-old making his major league or first extended major league debut like Yoan did last year, there's understandably that little hurdle you need to get over to show that you belong. Now, once you're over that, once you know and you're confident that you are a big leaguer, I think it frees you a bit to allow that talent to take over and for him to start realizing some of that upside. Now, again, there's still development with Moncada at the major league level. 22 years old, you know, only a few hundred plate appearances at this level, and there's going to be growing pains. But the ability and the confidence combined, as well as some of the refinements he's made in the short time he's been in Chicago, certainly make us very excited to see the type of year that's ahead of him.
Rick, appreciate as always. Great having you on. Looking forward to watching you guys this year. Different seat for me, but still looking forward to it.
Sounds good, guys. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Rick Hahn, general manager and vice president for the Chicago White Sox. Yoan Moncada is, for me, for the White Sox, for their... The pitching is one thing, the offense isn't. Yoan Moncada is the guy this all turns around. I'm not saying anything that's out of the norm. I'm not picking something out of thin air. People have written this. It's pretty obvious, but it can't be overstated.
There's...
You all right?
You know, well, I've seen this movie before, and there's 15, 20, what I would consider grade A prospects coming, and it's sometimes hard to predict.
Of course,
which ones are going to be really, really good, which ones are going to be good, which ones contribute, and which ones just kind of go away. And it's a numbers game, Connor. I would caution against getting hung up on any particular one and just know that there's a lot of them.
That helps.
When you add it all up at the end, you're going to have enough of what you need. And what you don't have, you have banked enough money to find the things that you don't have.
Quite honestly, I think the fact that the White Sox have as many as they do almost allows fans to get hung up more so on one particular prospect, because the letdown after that, remember when it was Felix PA, right, coming up for the Cubs?
Well, there's always been a Corey
just
Patterson
one
and
guy,
a
right?
Felix
PA. But when it's just one guy, when it's just that, the pressure and the expectations from outside, from inside, knowing that you're that dude, that's got to be different. And I think for the Cubs, it's a very different situation, knowing the depth, knowing the numbers that are there in that system. I think that changes the dynamic.
Yeah, it's the biggest part of this. Look, they got a ton of position players. They have plenty of those. The biggest thing is will they have enough pitching? And they're going to be bringing up a lot of young pitching over the next 12 to 18 months. And they're not all going to make it. You know, not every Michael Kopech and Alec Hansen is going to make it.
Right.
And it's all about the numbers. Just keep getting them up here. Let them get their brains beat in. Some may have to get sent back and brought back again. It takes time, and it's going to require some patience. It's fun for White Sox fans, but it's going to require some patience.
This segment brought to you by Fogo de Chão. Taste the difference of skilled gaucho chefs at Fogo de Chão Brazilian Steakhouse, where every cut is expertly prepared. Reserve today in Chicago, Rosemont, and Naperville at Fogo. .com. Barry, we got to wrap things up. We got to head on out of here. Zach Zaidman and the Cubs pregame show is just about to get going. Opening day is here, and you don't have to go anywhere. Just keep it right here on the Score. We've got it all for you.
Happy New Year, everybody.
Thanks so much for hanging out this week, Barry. Really appreciate it. Thanks to Jed Hoyer and Rick Hahn as well, our producers Jay Zawoski and Rick Camp. Brian Gertz does the video stream updates with Joe Ostrowski, who will be in tomorrow. Barry's out to watch all the baseball he can handle. I'll be with Joe tomorrow morning from 9 until 1. We'll have Doug Glanville. We'll have Jonah Carey. Plenty of baseball talk tomorrow. And plus those Loyola Ramblers, too. Final Four coming up. Mully is, God, I hope he's okay. Got a whole trip to make. I hope he's all right. We'll get it all for you. Cubs pregame show coming up in just a few right here on 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.